particular.
That's University of Exeter's PhD candidate Zarefa Barut speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. You've been listening to KABU News in Depth. I'm Zachary Jones-Naray, and see you next time. And it's been a privilege and a pleasure.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Independence. Not being subject to another's authority or jurisdiction. Grassroots. The common or ordinary people. KABU. A community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and September 21st to donate and help us reach our $30,000 fall membership drive goal to wake up the neighborhood.
KABU listeners, you want to tune in to PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m., where we do a deep dive into issues that matter most to our community. Every month, we're taking on homelessness, community policing, supporting local small businesses, and so much more. We're here to foster solutions and move progressive change. Brought to you by our dedicated team, me, Sherry Morish, and our host, Moses Ross. This show is your go-to for progressive dialogue and local action. Don't miss out on the conversations that are shaping Portland and the Pacific Northwest. Join us on PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. right here on KABU, where together, we're the voice of change.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic this evening is New Seasons Workers Ready to Strike. Our guests are Ella Malloy and Hans Heinze of New Seasons Labor Union. Ella works at the Williams New Seasons Market in North Portland, and Hans works at the Slabtown store in Northwest Portland. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start with the news. The New Seasons Labor Union is about 2 years old, now representing a majority of New Seasons workers in the Portland area at 11 stores. They've been struggling for a first contract after dozens and dozens of unfair labor practices by New Seasons management and increasing evidence of bad faith bargaining at the table. The steering committee of NSLU called for a strike authorization vote, which wraps up on Sunday, August 25th. This program is being recorded the day before. New Seasons touts itself as a socially responsible, progressive company that places as much value on taking care of our staff, community, and the environment as we do on providing the highest quality fresh local food. Let's start there. Ellen Hans, tell our listeners about what New Seasons says and about what New Seasons does.
Yeah, I think, you know, the big thing is that New Seasons is a pretty upscale grocery store, and they have this air of social responsibility and sustainability. But what we face as workers on the shop floor is like nowhere near what they're presenting to the public. A lot of people think that, you know, they're paying extra at New Seasons for a company that is worth more to the community. But the reality is that, you know, they started us at pennies over minimum wage, and a lot of times they don't treat us well.
I think that over the years it has changed, and I think New Seasons has always kind of been one of the more expensive grocery stores in Portland. And I even have very fond memories of going there when I was younger, and there always being samples and made to order sandwiches. And my parents supported the grocery store. It was a very boutique experience. And I think the overall model and vision of the company has changed. Like a clear example of that is that they've gotten rid of profit sharing for store employees.
So tell us about your working conditions and how they've changed over time. And what are the main demands that you're all bringing to the bargaining table?
Our focus right now is getting cost of living adjustments and more paid time off for employees, so more time off than just sick time. We've seen that it's very important for our coworkers that there's a fair attendance policy. And then we also want to keep some of the benefits that we really like. Like, we like our staff discount. We have subsidized TriMet passes, and we want to keep those. And we also have this thing called Blue Slip, which just means that we get access to the food that has to be pulled off the shelf, whether it's expiring or it's damaged products. I mean, a lot of our coworkers with families, that food is the way that they can help make ends meet. And since we have such low wages, we're also looking for standard things that you see in union contracts, like shift premiums for our graveyard workers and our busy days. We want a policy to help employees deal with customer harassment. And we're asking for things like overtime for 6 days in a row, or extra pay when we have to come into work to keep the store operating during hazardous conditions.
More thoughts about working conditions, Hans, and what you're bringing to the table?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what we're doing right now is, you know, we're fighting against takebacks. New Seasons was bought out a few years ago, right before the COVID-19 pandemic, by an international retail giant. And since then, it's just been like a slew of really bad anti-worker decisions that have been made in terms of like our attendance policy, work rules, stuff like that. There's been a lot of outsourcing of union work. A lot of our like value-added deli stuff has been closed. And as a result of that, you know, there's been cuts to labor, right? So our jobs have gotten a lot harder in the same time period, but our wages haven't kept up. So one of the main things that we're doing right now is we're demanding the MIT living wage for the Portland area for all of our employees, or for all of our coworkers, I should say. And that's currently $27.04 an hour. Now, New Seasons used to be a living wage employer at one point in its history, well before the buyout, and when cost of living in Portland was quite a bit lower. You know, but given the skyrocketing prices that we've seen in grocery, we think that that should be that way again.
New Seasons was started in Portland and has only been around for a couple decades. Union organizing at New Seasons has been tried in the past. So tell us about those efforts and why you think they failed.
I think this has really been led by the workers, and I don't think that was always the case for past organizing at New Seasons. And then with this campaign, one store after another has been organized almost every few months during the past few years. We see another store get organized, and it's really the workers at that store specifically which are joining NSLU. We don't have a lot of external organizing happening from other stores. And I think it's partly because you really have to be in the store to understand what problems to organize around. I think this is clear not only from upper management. Our upper management seems to not understand what really happens in their stores, but outside union organizers, I think, failed in this part too. You know, we have a lot of coworkers that have very close friends and roommates in their store and other stores, and some staff have worked there since the opening. So it's really a community, and I think it had to be organized from the community itself.
Yeah, I think a big difference here is that it's been more of a hot shop campaign than we've seen in the past. And again, doing that store by store organizing has been the only thing that's really been possible for us as a union that's worker led and worker run, just in terms of scale. But it's really shown to be the only way that's practical too. And I think that we're seeing that across the country right now in a lot of organizing campaigns.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. The wave of the New Seasons organizing reminds us of the wave of Starbucks workers organizing, which has involved about 14 shops in Portland now over the last year and a half. And other similarities with Starbucks is that workers tend to be young, self-organized, independent. Is there a connection between the Starbucks organizing and the New Seasons organizing, or for that matter, with Burgerville workers organizing or the Amazon workers organizing?
I think these shops do kind of all have different conditions and different workforces, but they also have this very similar type of turnover that a lot of retail and service industry jobs. But like an Amazon warehouse is huge in comparison to a Starbucks shop. And New Seasons, like one of our stores, is about 100 people to 200 people. So it's kind of in the middle ground, from my understanding, between those shops. But I think the main similarity is that these industries haven't been organized. If you were to ask someone that's been organizing a long time in the labor movement, especially most recently, more traditional organizing, I think they would tell you that it would be really hard to organize one of these chains. And it is hard to organize these, like, against giant conglomerates. So these workers are winning campaigns and winning certifications that some people might not even try to win. But since it's coming from within the warehouse, within the store, within the shop, you're making some wins that you might not expect.
The phenomenon of like the hot shop, as Hans suggested, and worker-led organizing it's really complemented by this, I think, just the networks, as you suggested, that people know people in other shops. And also, especially with the Starbucks organizing, social media has really made it possible for people to communicate how to do it. You know, you don't need a professional union organizer to come in and tell you how to do it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that social media has been a big piece. NSLU, you know, basically started at the scale that we're at right now, you know, going outside of one shop organizing, because of an Instagram page, right? And people, you know, DMing an Instagram page saying, I want to organize my store. How do I get there? And being brought together through that. So social media has been a big part, definitely.
I think that you could also point to, now you have a lot of college educated people in their 20s and 30s that are radicalized from their own like working conditions. It's hard to get out of a job and find a good job. I think people are starting to realize that, you know, you can go through all these jobs, but if you want a nice place to work, you probably have to organize it. And it doesn't usually get better. Sometimes your working conditions start to get worse. So I think that is also helping push this along. Like, we have had the pandemic and natural disasters and extreme amounts of wealth disparity. And I think unions are kind of answering the question right now, like, why does everything suck so much? Maybe we should bring back a strong labor movement to try to fix some of this.
I think you're really right about that, Ella. Job hopping is not a solution to economic precarity for many people. And so organizing is actually the more hopeful option. It's sometimes the only option. So what has been the response of New Seasons management to your organizing and various direct actions like smaller ULP strikes?
I mean, I think largely, you know, the company has been trying to feign basically being immune to it, right? Like, that's kind of the way that the company's labor relations strategy has panned out so far, to a large extent, ignoring the union, ignoring the problems that we can create for them, and trying to stall out and wear down the workforce.
I mean, we have filed over 10 unfair labor practices just around the company, making unilateral changes without bargaining with us. So, like, once you unionize, the company is supposed to keep the conditions the same. And that has not been the case. And it's hard to fight that.
So how have you and your coworkers resisted management's union busting tactics?
We have been able to resist, I think, some of management's union busting tactics by having really strong organizing committee and making sure that people are understanding that there are risks. It would be illegal for management to fire someone, but we don't want to send someone somewhere without being honest and transparent that, yeah, sometimes employers break the law. So that also means building lots of trust with coworkers and making sure that we help build their confidence. It's all about helping people realize that we need to shift the power in our workplace and make a more democratic workplace.
I think the trust part is really important. And I think that that's the reason that we're still here and we're still able to fight, is that we have that trust of each other. The fact that our union leadership is all rank and file workers is something that I think lends a lot of credibility to, like, the overall strategy. The fact that we're all in this fight together and there's no, like, concept, I guess, of, you know, if the company's trying to wear us down, there's no concept of, like, us going away or, like, you know, forgetting about the bargaining unit, that we all are together, right? And so I think that that's really important. And I think that that's where a lot of the continued resilience comes from. There is definitely burnout. There's turnover in our industry that's, like, incredibly high. I mean, Ella, your store, Williams, has something like nearly 70% turnover last year. And we're still able to fight despite that because of the fact that we're able, you know, we're in the shops, we're able to constantly build relationships with each other, constantly train new organizers, and constantly change the way that we're doing things when they don't work, and find a strategy that people can really get behind.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. We're listening to Ella Molloy and Hans Heinze of the New Seasons Labor Union, Ready to Strike. KBOO is community-supported, listener-sponsored, non-corporate radio. And if you enjoy this program, if you find it useful, please donate to kboo.fn/donate. Make the world a better place. Think about joining KBOO like joining a union. It's a choice. It's an open shop. You can benefit from the information, the tools, and inspiration that KBOO provides. And you can be a free rider, or you can join your sisters and brothers in solidarity to build a stronger, more effective voice for social change. It's up to you. So join now. Go to kboo.fm and donate. So we in the community have noticed that stores will occasionally go on strike. Usually more, not more than one store at a time, and that you've done things like march on the boss. Can you talk about some of the tactics that you've used to both push back on management and also bring workers together?
It's definitely been very hit and run so far, for sure. You know, I think that the scale of organizing, the ability to be responsive while momentum is still there, is something that we've seen is a lot easier to pull off at a single shop. You know, in some cases, even with like a single department. And that can kind of provide a sort of innate kind of leadership within the union that people find inspiring. So I think that that's been, you know, one source of our strength and part of our strategy for sure.
You've responded to some social issues that have come up and you've ended up with in conflict with management. Can you talk about those?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, when the issue came up with the genocide that's currently happening in Palestine, our rank and file pretty quickly, a few of our leaders actually at the Slabtown store presented to our membership meeting a resolution to take a stance publicly on what's happening. And that resulted in, you know, a really, I think, a lot of solidarity from the community and within the community, a lot of activation of people who maybe were in a position where they're somewhere in life where their own working conditions are not like that. They're not good, but they're not like a huge active problem for them, but who are politically conscious, to get active and involved in union work. And we saw the company, you know, turn around and try to make unilateral changes at a bunch of stores, preventing workers from being able to express solidarity with Palestine. And so, you know, that conflict really, I think, precipitated a lot of community support for us, which was great. And you know, I think that that's one of the things where, you know, we still have tons of rank and file wearing Palestine buttons, and that's one of the things that we've been able to hold on to and fight against.
A lot of that showed, like, when management kind of comes up with a new policy, and when, as a group, we fight back against that, however it is, like either march on the boss or we all start continuing to do what we've always done, like we all continue to wear pins, that we've always been allowed to wear pins, and just showing that management no longer has unilateral control over the company. Like, there is a union there and we are there together as their workers, and they need to acknowledge that and recognize that.
Love it. What has been the role of community support in giving workers confidence and pushing back on some of management's tactics?
I think we really need community support. While working on the floor, a lot of us have built connections with customers. I mean, especially our cashiers. When I used to live in the neighborhood of my store, like super close. So a lot of my neighbors I got to know partly because they would shop at the store and I would see them 5 days a week as their cashier when they're picking up their groceries for dinner. And it's really important to my coworkers that they see that customers are supporting them, especially if we have to go on strike, that they see customers on the picket line and supporting them, because there are like genuine connections that we have with our shoppers.
Yeah, as an independent union without, you know, institutional backing or deep pockets, I think it's really, really important for us to build those relationships with our community. I think that there's nothing that, you know, makes our coworkers feel more powerful than knowing that the, you know, customers that are bringing money into the business are actually on their side and not the company's. And we've seen a ton of that. We've had customers on our picket lines constantly. We have, you know, messages of support that we've received from people. People come in and talk to their cashiers about what's going on. And that's, you know, incredibly, incredibly confidence boosting.
So we hear there's a strike fundraiser sponsored by the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, this Tuesday, August 27th. Tell our listeners about that, why that's needed.
Yeah, everyone should come. It's at Lucky Lab. We're super excited that we have community supporters putting on this fundraiser for us. You know, we need donations. Like Hans just said, we're an independent union, and it's hard for us to fundraise ourselves for ourselves. On average, an NSLU worker makes 17 an hour, or just over 17 an hour. So to ask them to give us a few days of work to go out on the picket line can actually make or break whether our coworkers can afford rent, as it's already hard to pay rent in Portland with that low of a wage. So we're asking that everyone comes out to this strike fundraiser to make sure that if our coworkers do vote yes to strike, that there is funds to help support them. We're also asking that if you're not in Portland, to donate to nslu.org/donate, and you can contribute to help support workers if they have to go out onto the line.
So that's nslu.org/donate. And or come to the strike fundraiser Tuesday from 7 to 8:30. Is that right? At the Lucky Lab on Hawthorne.
How else can our listeners support your efforts, and how can they keep informed?
Never cross the picket line. I mean, that's really a huge part of it. Talking to your cashiers, you know, and your people in your union shops, because they know what's going on.
Everyone can follow us on social media too. We post on our Instagram, NSLU_PDX, and our Twitter.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We're talking with Ella Molloy and Hans Heinze of New Seasons Labor Union. I'm Jamie Partridge, here with my co-host, Laura Wadlin. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
This is Bird Night. Northern gannets are fish-eating seabirds, and they're incredible hunters. Aerodynamic, wings tucked back behind them, diving headfirst into the ocean at speeds of up to 60 miles an hour, pursuing their prey underwater with powerful strokes of their webbed feet. But sometimes, even northern gannets get a little help. Foraging pods of dolphins regularly herd fish into dense, frantic concentrations near the surface, where the fish are easier to catch. As this happens, gannets begin plunging into the shoals from aloft. The more tightly massed and closer to the surface the fish are, the better the bird's chances of catching some. So the dolphin's tactics are a kind of assist to the gannets. Scientists call this a multi-species feeding association, and it happens a lot. These gatherings may seem like evidence of cooperation between species, but in fact they're more about opportunity. Gannets, at the very least, take advantage of the dolphin's predatory fish-herding strategy to more easily grab a meal. These feeding frenzies may attract a mix of predators. Other seabirds like kittiwakes and gulls, as well as seals and even whales, may join the action. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Mary Piggott from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners.
This is Bird Note. Today is International Owl Awareness Day. Owls are magnificent animals that share our cities with us.
like great horned owls, and live in some of the most extreme environments on Earth, like snowy owls on the Arctic tundra. They range in size from huge, like the Blakiston's fish owl of Eastern Asia, to the songbird-sized elf owl of Mexico and the Southwest U.S., less than 6 inches tall and weighing less than half a deck of cards. Owls play key roles in their ecosystems. They keep prey populations of rodents and insects in check, which in turn helps promote a healthy balance of the species eaten by those animals. Owls even help control pests like non-native rodents where people live, all without traps or poison. And they lend their music to our nights. By giving these amazing birds their space when they're nesting, preserving habitats where they breed and hunt, and avoiding rodenticides that could poison their prey, we can help ensure a safe future for our world's incredible owls. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 21st. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.